Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family-owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks to Stan Weber for his time. We got the weekend forecast from Gary Lezak. We'll talk to former Royals catcher Mike McFarland coming up in the next segment. And then Tim Grunhard will talk Chiefs training camp with us in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm up in St. Joseph, Missouri at the Stony Creek Hotel and Conference Center where I've been covering Chiefs training camp all week long. We'll hear some more comments from Carlos Dunlap and Steve Spagnuolo and also Sky Moore, the Chiefs rookie wide receiver, coming up a little bit later. Right now, we're going to talk Mizzou football and take a quick look at what's going on with Mizzou's football camp right now with head coach Eli Drinkwitz. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm doing really good. I sure appreciate getting a little bit of that fight song rolling this morning. Boy, that got my heart rate going. I was pretty excited about that, so I appreciate that. Welcome.
Well, we appreciate you coming on the show, and I mentioned camp is going right now, going on for you and your football team. Maybe just a couple of maybe some early thoughts on what you've seen from your team so far, the mood, and I know that you've talked about the increased the depth now that you have that allows you to do some more things and maybe have a camp that's more indicative of what you want to do at the University of Missouri. So how have things been going so far?
Man, I tell you what, I really appreciate the way that our guys have approached. You know, we've been practicing in some real heat, you know, and it's been really hot. Our guys have approached, you know, the first day we had several guys with cramps and couldn't finish practice, and we just challenged those guys that availability is the best ability, and they're responsible to make sure their bodies are prepared for this practices, and boy, they've really responded. I thought we've had two really physical days of practice the past 2 days. We're starting to get to really know our team. We're starting to get to really see some young guys that have developed. I tell you what, Ennis Rakestraw has done a really nice job of recovering from his injury and playing with confidence. And I'm very excited about what he's doing on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I thought Isaiah McGuire and Darius Robinson have really picked up where they left off last year playing at a high level. And then I'm really excited about Christian Williams, the defensive tackle transfer. In fact, all those defensive tackle transfers have been really good. But boy, specifically, that Christian Williams has come out and played really well. You know, on the offensive side of the ball, it's all going to be about finding a quarterback. We've got to establish that quarterback. And I think we're further along in identifying that guy. I think all four of our quarterbacks have been battling. We've had too many turnovers in the first 4 days, and that's the number one thing that we've got to correct. And so we're working on that even as we speak. So, but I'm really excited about the way this thing's coming together, and I like the physicality that our team is practicing with.
And so, Coach, you mentioned that quarterback battle. It's such a wide variety of quarterbacks, from a true freshman in Sam Horn to a 25-year-old that's married and has a kid and that's been to several schools. That's the whole spectrum of quarterbacks right there. How's that been to have a kid, you know, you're working with that's just getting introduced to college football, and a guy like Abraham who's been around the block a time or two? It really covers all the bases, but that makes for and then of course you got to mention, you know, Cook and Macon. That makes for an interesting quarterback room and a lot for you to try to choose from.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing better than a little competition is a lot of competition, and that's exactly what we got in this room. I think it's a good balance between Jack and Sam. You got the young kid who's growing out his mustache and figuring out what college is all about. You got another guy that wears a wedding band to practice. And so, you, like you said, you got the whole spectrum, but there's that provides some maturity and accountability to the group. And I think, again, I think Brady and Mako have done exactly what we've asked them to do throughout the summer and to put themselves in a position to compete. Again, it's going to be about who can consistently – it's not just about making the play. It's about also not making the play that costs you the game. And before you can win a championship, you first got to keep from beating yourself. And so that's really going to be the focus of this next six-day run. And I really believe after these next 6 days, we'll know who our starting quarterback is.
And so that was my next question. You think within the next 6 days, you've said that that's, you know, the starting quarterback will reveal himself to you. You think that's going to happen within the next week?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, we may not reveal it to the rest of the country, but I think over the next 6 days, by letting those guys go live, having a couple of live scrimmages, and just the requirements of what these next 6 days are going to take for us to be successful, I think the guy that emerges from that will definitely show himself, and that's what we need to have happen.
So you said you won't tell the rest of the country. How long will you keep that a secret? Will you just keep it right up into game week leading up to September 1st for a competitive advantage? Does it matter to you when you announce it? How do you handle a situation like that?
No, we'll announce it. But we may not announce it on the timetable that everybody in the media wants us to. You're not going to be able to keep it a secret. I mean, there's guys out there looking over the fence the other day trying to figure out who takes first-team reps and second-team reps and all that good stuff, which is fine. I mean, that's good. That means you got passionate fan base. So we'll let everybody know when the time's right, but we also want to handle it in-house right and make sure that we give everybody their opportunity with no bias to earn the job.
Nate Bucchetti, you're on with Coach Eli Drinkwitz.
Good morning, Coach. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Doing well. Hey, I want to go back to you brought it up a couple times, so this is clearly a big point of emphasis, and that was the turnovers. You mentioned you've had too many of them, and then you came back and said that's something that you're really making a point of emphasis. And I'm kind of curious, with the job of quarterback anymore, there's so many different components to it. You hear about how much happens with a pre-snap read, that so many decisions get made before you ever even actually snap the ball. But then the quarterback also has to make those decisions based on, you know, what changes through the course of live action. When you see these turnovers right now, are you seeing a common theme of these are mistakes in terms of reading the defense, or they're mistakes in terms of maybe, you know, taking too many chances on passes that are just maybe ill-advised throws? Are you seeing a common theme that in the turnovers that you're trying to cut down on?
Well, I mean, I think there's both. Most turnovers are decision-making opportunities. You know, you made the bad decision. You tried to force the ball into a spot it wasn't. You know, yesterday or maybe 2 days ago, our quarterback got baited. He thought it was man-to-man. It turned out the coverage changed to cover two post-snap. And so, you know, that was a great teaching opportunity and learning. I mean, there's going to be times when the defense gets you, and so you got to learn from that. The biggest thing is to err is human. You know, to make mistakes is human. It's whether or not you continually make the same mistakes. If you can learn to not make the same mistake over and over again, then you can be the quarterback and you can have a better decision-making process. And so, you know, we've just had several. We start our training camp in the red zone, so we spent the first 3 days in the red zone. Everything happens a little bit tighter. Everything's more condensed, and the decision-making is much more difficult. And so we backed it out of there yesterday and didn't have any turnovers yesterday, which was a great sign. We did have one ball on the ground in a mesh on a zone read opportunity, but we were able to recover it. So that was good to see progress, you know, but again, one day doesn't make a season. So you got to make sure that that's something that you can consistently do throughout the course of the job.
Mizzou head football coach Eli Drinkwitz is our guest. And something else that I saw that you had said that I thought was interesting is, you know, a term you've used is cut it loose when it comes to the passing game this year. And you've mentioned that, you know, the play calling and your approach to play calling the last couple of years maybe hasn't been indicative of who you are as a play caller and what you are, what your offense to be. You have this tremendous upgrade of weapons around whoever the quarterback is going to be. Can you elaborate on that just a little bit as far as what you want this offense to be and what you want the passing game to be this year in your third season at Mizzou?
Yeah, I would say this. I didn't say over the course of time. I just said towards the end of last year. I think when you look at the last four games of the season, you know, we threw an interception against Vanderbilt in the red zone up 17-0. And from that point on, I got really conservative as a play caller. You know, South Carolina game, we had just a couple of vertical shots down the field, but threw a couple of interceptions, and so I pulled the back a little bit, definitely versus Florida. And then, you know, you go back and watch the Arkansas game, a game we scored 50 points the previous year, you know, didn't put the ball in the air enough to try to give us a chance to win the game. And so I just think that's what I mean was I got too conservative, you know, after the bye week last year, just trying to make sure we weren't in a position to lose the game. But we weren't in a position to win the game either. And so it's that balance. And I guess I would just say, you know, whoever our quarterback is going to have to be able to handle the whole thing at all times, whether that's running or throwing or being, you know, and being more aggressive with him.
You know, Mizzou fans are talking quite a bit about these young wide receivers that you have. Tell us how the weapons have looked so far in camp.
Yeah, I've been very impressed. Dominic Lovett's been the offensive player of the day twice in the first 4 days of practice. Luther Burden's had several plays. Chance Looper's having a really good camp. I really like the way Makai Miller, a guy from Kansas City, is coming along. You know, the old man, Toski Dove, and Barrett Bannister, Mr. Consistent, both those guys have been able to play. Mookie Cooper is a guy who's been more consistent and continues to be a guy that we're excited about. So we've got guys out there, and it's, you know, our quarterbacks are getting them the football. And now that we've opened up in the open field a little bit more, you're seeing more of that speed take off.
And Lovett in the slot really showed what he could do as a playmaker in the spring game. Seems like that's a perfect role for him.
Yeah, I really think that, you know, we found his position, a position in the slot wide receiver that he can affect the game, not only through touches, through jets, through bubble screens, but also vertical throws down the field. And so, yeah, he's a weapon that we've got to make sure we utilize.
I know another important position group is that offensive line, and I know that you confirmed this week that Bence Polgar, a transfer from Buffalo, was ruled ineligible by the NCAA, and he had a good chance to be the starting center. But it seems like you've been impressed with what you've got there behind him, especially redshirt freshman Connor Tolleson. So how's that battle at center going and across the entire offensive line?
Yeah, we've been very impressed, knock on wood, with all three guys as far as their ability to command the center position, get us into the right protections, the right mic ID points, making sure that all five guys are acting as a single unit. Obviously, there's things that they've got to do better, and they're getting challenged with the added depth that we have as a defensive front. But him, Connor, Drake Heismeyer, and Richard Taylor have all taken reps at the center position. Those guys are we're going to be just fine at the center position.
So, Coach, overall, when it comes to your philosophy on offensive linemen, how much versatility are you looking for with those with that position in terms of being able to rotate guys different spots along the offensive line?
Well, I think the biggest key is you got to play your five best offensive linemen. You can't play you can't play the backup left tackle if he's the 10th best offensive lineman. Right? You got to find a way to get if somebody gets injured, how do I get my next best player into the game? So position flexibility is extremely important, and I think we have that. You know, one of the best things about Connor Wood, our starting right guard, is he started against Florida at right tackle. You know, he's got the ability to bounce out and play a tackle position and a guard position. You got a guy like Luke Griffin who's played both guard positions for us and started at both of those positions. You got a young guy, Armand Mimbu, who's a young man from Kansas City who was here in the spring, which has given him the opportunity to really compete at that right tackle position and he's showing a lot of really good things. And then I heard somebody say they were in St. Joe, the pride of St. Joe, Bobby Lawrence, Mr. Consistent, a guy who battled from injury last year, has really had a good spring for us so far, or not spring, a really good fall camp for us so far. Mr. Consistent does whatever we ask, and so I'm excited about that. And then there's another guy, that Mitch Walters, a young man from St. Louis who has played a lot of different positions, but has the right size and mentality. He's been battling that right guard position. Very excited about what Mitch is doing.
Yeah, Coach, I'm up here in St. Joe covering Chiefs training camp, and I know St. Joe's a football-loving town, and all the fans here, Bobby Lawrence playing at Central here in St. Joe, they'll be excited to hear that that he's having a good camp.
Yeah, we really love Bobby Lawrence, and he represents all the right things about the Mizzou football program, and he represents all the right things about bleeding black and gold and having a team-first mentality. So I can't say enough positive things about Bobby.
Hey, Coach, switching to the defensive side of the football, I think one thing the fans can get excited about on that defensive line, a lot of size there. You're talking about, I think, what do you have, five or six tackles listed at 300 pounds or more, and a chance to be really physical. You talked about, Christian Williams, and you've talked about some of the transfers, but that's very exciting to see the defensive line and how maybe they could stack up against some of those SEC offensive lines. Got to be physical. It looks like you got the guys to do it.
Yeah, I mean, an inside drill, you get to stand back behind and get a good view of what the line of scrimmage are doing. And I'm going to tell you right now, we finally have the size that it takes on both sides of the line of scrimmage. You got Christian Williams and Josh Landry. Jaden Jernigan's put on the weight. Marquise Graciel, Jalen Marshall, obviously Darius Robinson, Daniel Robledo on the just a defensive tackle. And those guys are all in the 300-pound range. Jaden Jernigan's right at 280. But on the offensive side of the ball, we can match that same size. And I think that's a tribute to Coach Russell, our strength and conditioning coach. You know, he's in charge of sports performance and making sure that those guys, along with Liz Stewart, our nutritionist, and Zach Parker, our athletic trainer, those three people working together to make sure our people are strong, eating the right stuff, and recovering has made a huge difference within our program.
All right, Coach, just more on the defense. I know you got some upperclassmen, four upperclassmen in the safeties, and so that's going to really help that secondary. But tell me a little bit about the linebackers and the secondary and how they look so far in camp.
Well, my goodness, at the linebacker position, you've got a couple of guys who played a lot of football with Chad Bailey and Devin Nicholson. You know, they've been with Coach Smith for three seasons now. They understand what's expected and what's required. You got Tyron Hopper, a transfer from Florida, who is a really natural, gifted linebacker with length and speed, and he will strike. You've got some, and then you got Chuck Hicks, a guy who's transferred in, was in that incubator last year, but is really poised to come out. You got some young guys, Will Norris, Zach Lovett, Damian Wilson. And then I tell you what, there's a true freshman. He was here this summer, Carmichael Glass. And those guys are playing physical downhill football, which is the brand that I think the Mizzou Tigers all want to see. At the safety position, I think Martez Manuel has really stood out to me at the star position. You know, last year we played more of a three-corner defense. Now we're playing a more three-safety defense where the nickel is involved in the run fit. We call it the star. Is involved in the run fit butt coverage. And the way Martez Manuel plays, that's his natural position, a guy who was not afraid to strike but has coverage skills. So very excited about him. J.C. Carlees was a guy who played free safety for us last year. He's been in the program 3 years, understands what it means to play that middle of the field. And then Joseph Charleston, transfer from Clemson, along with Jelani Williams, are battling at the other position. So it's been fun so far to see. Jelani's had an interception, Joseph Charleston's had an interception. So we like to get on those guys a little bit about, when's Martez going to find the ball in his hands.
Hey, Coach, you mentioned switching up the secondary formation a little bit, going with three safeties this year. Could you talk about what went into that decision? Was this like a personnel-based thing or something more about just the way you're seeing offenses and the way you want to go against them coming up this year?
Yeah, it's kind of a both. Our personnel was probably fit more, and I think, you know, a little bit in the NFL, that slot wide receiver, you can play more man-to-man and play more eight-man front, one high. I think in college football, when you're talking about quarterback runs, you have to have some what we call quarters-based principles or cover four principles in order to do that. You really need to be able to play a safety box fitter at the nickel position, especially when you combine that with the RPO aspect of what defenses are doing or offenses are doing. So it's kind of one of both of those things. And then you look at our personnel at the star position, whether it's Daylon Carnell or Martez Manuel, those are two bigger guys who have the ability to get ball in their hands, play with a high motor, make plays. And so it made more sense for us to get those guys on the field than necessarily try to play a three-corner position. Now, on third downs, obviously it gives you more flexibility if you put that third corner to cover their slot and play a little bit more man-to-man.
Hey, Coach, before we wrap things up, got to mention special teams. You have one of, if not the best kickers in the nation, the Thicker Kicker, which is also the best nickname in college football. You're going to have one of the best punt returners in the nation if any team dares kick the football to him. But you got a three-man battle for the punting job, and that can't be overlooked. So overall, how's special teams looking in that battle for who's going to be the punter?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest question marks we have on our football team is who's going to be in charge of that punt position. Obviously, at the kickoff specialist, you got Sean Ketting. At the kicker, you got the Thicker Kicker. At the snapper, you got Jay Kaufman and Daniel Hawthorne. But we got to establish who's going to punt the football, and can't lose sight of the fact that our punter for the past two seasons has been very consistent. So you've got Jack Stonehouse, a guy who's been here a year from California. You got Luke Bauer, a young man from St. Louis. And then Sean Ketting, a cross trainer, who's punted for us in the Arkansas game and did a nice job. So, again, it's similar to quarterback. It's about consistency and making sure that they don't outkick their coverage, add enough hang time, and maximize the length of the punt, but also put the ball inside the 10 when we have the right field position. And that's coming along. I'll be honest, I haven't charted it probably as much as Coach Link has, but we'll make sure that, well, hopefully we don't have to use them in the first couple of games.
That would be great for Mizzou fans. And, Coach, before we let you go, just kind of big picture, man, 4 weeks away, and it's going to be that Thursday night season opener against Louisiana Tech in Columbia, a showcase game where so many eyeballs that can't wait to watch college football are going to be focused on Mizzou in that matchup. And I know that a lot of fans are excited to be there for a primetime opener. How important is that to get a lot of momentum and a lot of excitement, get the fans down there and really have a good performance to start the season off with so many people watching?
Yeah, we need to start fast as a fan base and as a team, and would love nothing more than to have 7,500 students in the stadium, sold out, sell out the student section, you know, make sure that it is a raucous environment. Let our players know that they're going to have the full support, and we're going to bring our A game. We're not looking ahead to anything else. Our entire focus is on Louisiana Tech and getting off to the right start. We understand that's going to be a quality opponent, but to have a night game in Faro is a pretty special opportunity in front of the whole college football world to see who we are and what we want to be about. And we need all of our fans there, and we need everybody to show up. So take that Friday off, have yourself a four-day weekend, get up here and watch some good football.
You hear that, Nate? I'm taking that Friday off. All right, Coach Drinkwitz says take it off. Taking it off.
Yep.
You tell Chad down the hall, maybe I need you to sign an excuse for me, Coach. I don't know, but I'm taking that Friday
permission
off because you just said it. So I'll be down in Columbia. Coach, thank you so much for the time, as always. Hopefully we can get you on again between now and then, but we appreciate you coming on the show and talking Mizzou football.
Heck yeah, man. We got to do this again. Our fan base in Kansas City is important to us, and however we got to reach them, if that means me spending more time on the radio with you fellas, I'm all for it because they're an important part of our success.
Yes.
Let's do it, Coach. Good luck, and can't wait till the season starts. We'll talk to you again very soon.
M-I-Z.
That's right, Z-O-U. That's Coach Eli Drinkwitz updating us on the progress in fall camp. And so that's going to be very – so you got you got September 2nd then?
I'm writing it down in the calendar right now.
Let's go ahead and play this out on the air. Or, yay, somebody wants to hire me to do a remote in Columbia on September 2nd. I could do the show there from Friday. Make that a business trip.
I'll be in town. I'll be here on the 2nd. So,
you know, do like a breakfast remote somewhere in Columbia. Talk about the game.
Why not? Yeah. Sales staff on that. I'm sure they're listening right now.
Are you? What in God's name makes you sure they're listening right now? You said that with such misplaced confidence.
That was called being ironic.
That's your favorite song from Alanis Morissette. Oh, I know that.
Yeah, it's just hard to pick my favorite song by her.
You gotcha. Come on, sales staff. Sell me.
Well, how could you not sell this guy?
What? Yeah, there's a lot of different reasons why. We will take a break. We'll catch up with Mike McFarland after this on WHB.
Right behind Johnny Ray's on the north side of 50 Highway there in Lee Summit. We're going to be here till 10 at Kansas City Cards and Collectibles on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Marco, how's everything going back there?
I've gotten out of my seat.
Been juggling a lot of things back there.
He's standing up right now. He's not even sitting down in his chair. He looks like he's at the ready for something to happen.
He's been chasing Mike McFarland.
And you know,
did you catch him? Did you catch him?
Nope.
If someone sees Mike McFarland anywhere in the city, tell him to call into Sports Radio 810 WHB for his weekly segment.
I thought I saw me a Mike McFarland. Was not a Mike McFarland.
Well, when he does come on, he can talk about his former team beating his former team. That's baseball humor. As the Royals beat the Red Sox 7-3. MJ Melendez, 2-for-4 with his 11th home run. Bobby Witt Jr., 2-for-4 with a couple of runs scored in a ribby. Salvador Perez, Salvi, good God, man. He's crushing the ball right now. 2-for-4, the run scored, 4 ribbies, and home run number 15. Vinny Pasquantino was 1-for-2 with a ribby and a walk. And then Nate Eaton, who got called up, 1-for-4, along with Michael Massey, 1-for-4. And so, Nicky Lopez was 1-for-2 with 2 runs scored, 2 walks, and 2 stolen bases. Bobby Witt Jr. had stolen base number 21. And then Michael Massey stole his first base of the year. Chris Bubich, 6 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. That'll play every day. But I am very excited about Michael Massey being up. I want him to play every day. He can have one day off between now and the end of the season. That's it. Nate Eaton is up. But it seems – so Nick Prado was out of the lineup. So it seems like maybe the Royals were one trade short or so of really clearing up a little bit of a logjam here with position players. But here's the guys I want to play every day, or at least close to. And they got to get creative. Melendez – Bobby Witt, Pasquantino, Prado, Massey, and Eaton. Who am I missing for? I mean, Salvi, obviously, you know. But who am I missing of guys that need to be in the lineup every day for proper evaluation?
I think that's it.
So how do you do it? Because, look, Hunter Dozier's struggling, and I know that, you know, he's under contract and he's had a okay season, but he needs to give up some at bats to Nate Eaton and Massey. O'Hearn doesn't need to be in the lineup. I'm kind of man. Kyle Isbell's struggling. He is struggling. I want to see him get some at bats. Maybe I should have included him in there, but I feel like we've seen more of him obviously than Massey and Eaton. So yeah, I'd like to him work into the mix. I think it's more important for him to get at bats than Dozier. But like last night, you know, everyone was in the lineup except for Isbell, he was a pinch runner, and then, like I said, Prado wasn't out there. But I guess the two guys, and we know what Bobby Witt Jr. is. You know, we've seen what MJ Melendez is. The guys that I'm most intrigued watching down the stretch to see what they could do, Pasquantino and Prado. But really, I guess because they're the new shiny toys, Michael Massey and Nate Eaton. And, you know, Massey can play, is played second base. He's played third base already. Eaton can play all three positions in the outfield, and he can play third base. Let's talk to Mike McFarland about this. Matt, good morning. How are you?
My bad, boys. When you're babysitting your granddaughter and you have all phones on mute, you tend to forget things real quick. So right. Sorry for being late.
No, there's no worries there. I get it. And better late than never, because we're talking about all the new faces in the lineup and who needs to get at bats. And again, yeah. But look, I want to see it. I want, especially now that they're called up, I want Massey and I want Nate Eaton in the lineup damn near every day, because I want to know what we have in them, what they are. And I know it's trying to be a third of the season or so, but you could find out a lot. And I want to have just a good idea of what they are and where they fit in going into next year. And so I it's just more important for me for them to get at bats than Hunter Dozier. Like last night, Prado's on the bench. I'd like to see all those guys in the lineup moving forward. Mac, what about you?
100%. And like we kind of talked about with the Blue Jays series when they were all up there in Toronto, it was exciting to watch. I mean, the reaction, seeing how they're adjusting to the speed of the game, the different velocity, the breaking balls and changeups and fastball counts, all of the things that happen at the major league level, you're going to get a real good chance to look at all these guys to see, you know, what they can do. You know, record be damned. This is more about moving forward and seeing how you can supplement in the offseason, you know, with any acquisitions that you need to make. But look, you got Salvi back. You need him in there because he's the presence in the lineup that has been obviously extremely clutch since he's come back from his thumb issue. The settling nature, still continuing to work with those young pitchers. But, you know, leaving him to DH, see what MJ can do, improving on his receiving and things along those lines. But this is a lot of fun to watch, and I think it's going to capture the, you know, until football season kicks off, but capture the city a little bit to see what these young guys do that they've heard so much about throughout the years and how much success they've had in the minor leagues. And right now it's two big thumbs up on how these kids are representing themselves at the big league level.
And so the two new guys that, you know, we, like you said, we saw them in Toronto, but then they're back up, Massey and Eaton. And man, Eaton's got a gun. He's got an arm out there in the outfield. I'm just curious what you think. What are your expectations? What do you see in Michael Massey and Nate Eaton?
Well, in Massey, I see just a tremendous athlete. He's short to the ball at the plate, has the ability to elongate and keep that barrel in the zone. Still getting a read on Eaton, but ran down a couple nice balls last night fairly easily. And with the absolute hose that he has, I mean, that's a difference maker out there in right field. You always want, you know, the strongest arm in the outfield to make that long throw to third base in right field. So, look, it's going to be a lot of fun. Massey, I think, maybe a little bit more polished, I guess you could say, at the plate than Eaton. But let's see what he can do. Find a way to keep those kids in the lineup and let them go. Give them a rest when they need the more of a mental break from just getting beat up. Because quite honestly, the schedule gets very difficult from here on out, and going up against a lot of the Central teams that are fighting for playoff spots and to win the Central. So let's see what they can do. The pitch and rotation, the kids are settling down nicely and throwing extremely well. A lot of things to keep a Royals fan's attention for the rest of the season.
Nate Bucchetti.
Hey, Mac, how's it going?
Doing all right, buddy.
I want to talk about Chris Bubich a little bit. Because I was very excited about him coming into this season, and his struggles have been one of the biggest disappointments to me, because I thought he really showed last year that he was, you know, on the verge of kind of putting it together, so to speak. He had a good outing last night, and I'm just kind of curious what you've seen in terms of his evolution here over the past month or so.
Well, evolution, maturity, whatever you want to call it, I think it's more of a starting to trust his stuff. You know, you hear Monty say it all the time. I think early on he was just trying to be too perfect and trying to overthrow his fastball, and especially his changeup, which is just filthy, that he throws to righties and lefties. I think he's just calmed down, and now he's starting to understand, look, these guys have swing and miss in their approaches at the plate. I just throw my stuff without trying to do too much and working a little bit more location rather than velocity, but has really stepped it up his last two, three, four starts, whatever it's been, and has looked impressive. And when you start to see big league hitters, established big league hitters, look pretty silly on his changeup, you know that the kid has effectiveness and just enough fastball to, you know, tie him up inside with a good fastball. And I think he's realizing that it's always hard when you're, I don't want to say finesse pitcher, but you don't throw 97, 98 and have to pitch. That's been the biggest evolution, is he's learning that when he goes about it in that fashion, pitching rather than throwing, his stuff is good enough to get you deep into a ball game, in my opinion. Maybe third time around, okay, but still, the first two times through, been very effective as of late.
Mike McFarland's our guest. Mac, before I ask you about the trade deadline deals, Eric Hosmer made his return to Kauffman Stadium. They played a tribute video for him. He got a nice ovation, a big hug from Salvi. Man, that hit me in the feelings a little bit more than I thought it would, after watching that video and you know, seeing him with Salvi again and thinking about 7 years ago it was that they won the World Series. When you think back to Eric Hosmer, how will you remember him as a Royal now that we're revisiting that since he's in town with the Red Sox?
Oh, Hos was always the guy, the first guy to step up and answer the questions after tough games. That's what I appreciate. He would let you know when he stunk and would deflect the praise and accolades towards the team when he did well. And that's the leader in the clubhouse, the face of the clubhouse. You know, Alex Gordon led by example, just his tenacious fashion with he went about his game. Salvi was a huge part of that as well. But when you needed a quote when things weren't going well, you always went to Eric Hosmer, and he'd give you a matter-of-fact answer. And look, understand, I played in Boston, and it was just cutthroat, and the fans were cutthroat and would let you know. The fans here in Kansas City, they truly appreciate the players that had played and were successful here before, and it was a well-deserved and a tremendous job by the Royals fans last night of showing him that appreciation, having him back in the American League where they can see him on a, you know, going to get to go to Boston and see him again. So it was very, I'm sure he was very appreciative of it, but still, the Royals fans around here, they love their players, former players, and everything about them for what they did for the organization.
Okay, Mac, trade deadline. The Royals traded Whit Merrifield to the Blue Jays. And now Whit Merrifield has said he did get his vaccination shot and he is going to be good to go for home and away games for the Blue Jays. And last night, they had him hitting eighth and playing center field, and he went 2-for-5 with a run scored and a rib. He struck out 3 times, but still got a couple of hits, and the Blue Jays beat the Twins 9-3. What did you think of the deal and what the Royals got back?
Well, again, I think that what we got back will play out. Just keeping an eye on that. But I think Witt knew his time in Kansas City had ended, irregardless of his quotes prior to Toronto, the Toronto series. They needed to make room for these kids to see what they got, period. And I think they did a good job of getting something out of it. Whit Merrifield is one of those guys that you can say you were lucky to play with. You know, the same thing with Alcides Escobar. Remember when Esky started going south and fans were on him, and I'm like, look, this guy is out there every inning of every game. And that has tremendous value, not only in the clubhouse when the guy's going out there hurt, but the fact that the defense didn't necessarily wane when he was in the game. So the guys like that you love playing with that are gamers, just a baseball rat that had a tremendous career here. You look back, and you know, a year or two from now, and you look at leading the league in hitting, and all of the in hits, and all of stolen bases, and the, you know, playing different positions without batting an eye. I think Whit Merrifield's time here will be thought of more fondly than just the last month that he was here. But still, wish him the best of luck, and hopefully gets his chance to get into the playoffs.
Nate Buchady,
any thoughts on the Cam Gallagher trade, Mac?
You know, when I got traded, I was emotional as well. And, you know, I left 1 year to go to Boston by free agency and came back. And then when I did get traded, I wanted to finish my career as a Royal. You know, going home and playing in front of my family was you know, one of the side things that made it okay. But still, when you wear your heart and soul on your sleeve like Cam Gallagher, and, you know, nothing exemplifies that more than having a bad hamstring and wanting to still be in there, irregardless, just to give Salvi that day off, tells you a lot about his character as a ball player. So, you know, the thing that Royals do is they develop, they identify character players, bring them in and develop them. And, you know, Cam Gallagher was one of those players. But still, now you're looking at a chance to go to the World Series with the Pods picking up Soto, so I don't feel too bad for him. I'm actually thrilled for him, but had a chance to talk to him and get to know him a little bit just from that catcher's union, and just a fantastic kid. And, again, I hope he does well and gets a chance for that postseason ring.
Mike McFarland, thank you so much for the time, sir. We appreciate it.
Sorry I was late, boys. Won't happen again.
Oh, you know, hey, Mac, you've earned that right. You can be late anytime you want.
Especially if it's for the grandkids,
yeah,
man.
Hey,
right.
Yeah. Well, at least it wasn't Lezak bumping me 15 minutes telling me some story about the weather. So,
hey.
Know, that's all right. We're even after all those years.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah. Yeah. You're fine.
On,
you're fine there, Mac.
All right, boys.
Thanks, Mac.
Weekend.
That is Mike McFarland. We'll be back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Good show so far. We've had Stan Weber. We talked to Gary Lezak. We had Mizzou head football coach Eli Drinkwitz. Former Royals catcher Mike McFarland. We've had played plenty of sound from Chiefs training camp, including new defensive end Carlos Dunlap. We heard from Steve Spagnuolo. But we've got more. We got Andrew Wiley and Sky Moore coming up, along with our guest right now, Tim Grunhard, who joins us from wherever the hell he is around the world today. Hello, Timmy. Where are you? There's a break then. All right. Well,
Timmy's joining us on the other side of the...
All right.
I'm doing pretty good, Steven. How are you?
Yeah. How's that sound? Well, Tim Gwynn will be with us in the next segment. Yeah. I don't know what the hell that was. It didn't sound like him at all. But what is that what he sounds like to you?
Tell you what, morning, Steven, I'm here. I don't know. I can't do a good grunt. I'm not going to try.
Oh, man, up there, St. Joe.
I've been lifting a lot of weights.
Yeah. What?
Grunty's always lifting weights, you know? Guy's in phenomenal shape for a guy that's retired.
How about instead we'll give away a pair of tickets to the 100-year anniversary celebration coming up on Thursday at Midland, the Midland. What do you want to do?
Can I have a couple
Caller
tickets?
Caller what?
You can give them to me?
No.
No?
Caller number what?
Caller number 100. Look at that.
I'm
look
with you on
Marco's
that.
Face,
I'm with
right?
you. No, I'm with you on that. Yeah, okay, caller number 100 for the 100 year anniversary. They're
about,
well
how,
done.
How about caller number 9 for Carlos Dunlap?
No. How about why 9 for Carlos Dunlap?
No, because he's going for 100 sacks. Caller number 100.
Or how about
Dunlap's
caller number
going for 100 sacks? This is the 100 year birthday.
No, Marco.
Need to answer. I want to
go back. I want to go back to 9. Why
or
do you
eight.
Want 9 for him?
What number is he?
Okay,
he's 8. Yeah, 8.
He's 8. Yeah. He's 8. How about 9 for Carlos Dunlap?
Yeah.
That'd be great. Jesus, end this segment. Caller number 8 gets tickets to the 100-year anniversary coming up Thursday night at the Midland. Back after this with Tim Gunhart on WHB.